The Wellington Project. Wellington, a small town in central west New South Wales at the junction of the Bell and Macquarie Rivers. The place where the two rivers meet. It could be where black and white Australia meet.
The Wellington Project is 2 years of research and consultation with the local Wiradjuri community to write their histories into the history of the official histories of Wellington. My name's Matt Galois. My grandfather, Ernest Moulton, migrated from England and moved to Wellington in 1944. He was the owner proprietor of the Wellington Times for the following 21 years. And I've stayed in contact with Wellington through my mother, visiting occasionally. And you know, I grew up in Melbourne, I live in Sydney, and I've studied both art and architecture. And I had the good fortune in 2005 to, I came to Wellington, I had the good fortune to meet Wiradjuri elder Joyce Williams, and she talked to me a little bit about her life and her experience growing up in Wellington. And those stories really stayed with me, and it wasn't until a few years later I kind of joined the dots between my grandfather as editor proprietor of the Wellington Times, my own interest in culture and particularly in housing, the Australian home, is a big theme of my practice. And so my grandfather's as editor, my interest in Australian culture and the Australian home. And also, after many years of study with 2 degrees, I realised I had a very poor understanding of what the Indigenous homes means to contemporary Aboriginal people. So I was, I had spoken to Joyce, and all these things came together, and I had the idea to create a publication that would really inform me and then hopefully others about the Indigenous experience relating to the Indigenous home.
That then becomes the Wellington Project.
That's right. And it's a couple, maybe 2 months ago, I went back to my original letters to the community and the council when I initiated the project, and I thought it'd be about 16 to 20 pages long. So make a little newspaper, talk about these issues. The more I became involved, the more I realised what an incredibly rich and interesting history Wellington has, and a very interesting colonial history and a very interesting history of race relations. And I got completely carried away. The project grew into almost a full-time job over 2 years. And the final product, called Wellington, is 68 pages long and close to 50,000 words. The first half deals with, there's a lot of historical documents, a central essay which I wrote with Gaynor MacDonald, who works at Sydney University. So the central part is an article called Colonisation that looks at Wellington's colonisation. And then more historical documents. And then the second part of the publication is really local Aboriginal people in their own words, often penned by themselves, talking about their stories, their histories.
We're sitting currently in essentially the middle of Wellington itself. Through your eyes, what is Wellington like?
I'm very, very fond of Wellington. It's a beautiful town. It's a meeting place of two rivers, the Bell and the Macquarie. For me, one of the things that's really rich and incredible about Wellington is its Indigenous history, which in some ways hasn't really been fully celebrated. So it's been really great to be part of that, of a project that brings a lot of those stories to the forefront.
Over the next few days, we'll be hearing from some of those people who are very much a part of the rich tapestry that makes up Wellington. From a family point of view, your grandfather being the editor of the paper, it was a fairly conservative time probably when he was in charge. What have you made of that time?
Well, it was really interesting too. My grandfather died 3 years before I was born, so I never met him. My mum had spoken to me a little bit about my grandfather. I knew that he voted for the Nationals. But I also, she always framed his political position in terms of being a progressive conservative person. So, nevertheless, I was really, I was very curious to look back and to look at how he represented Aboriginal people in those 21 years. And I really would have, whatever I found, I really made that commitment. My mother was, a little bit apprehensive, but I was really, I'd made that commitment to Just try to report what I found in the clearest and most honest way possible. And my grandfather, there's really, over those 21 years, it's quite evenly divided into two quite distinct periods. The first decade, there's very little content about Aboriginal people in the Wellington Times. There's a few little articles. There's some articles that are kind of humorous, or there might have been, an Aboriginal sports person that had, a boxing champion or something like that. The article's a little bit trivial. They're not, they were always sensitive, and there were never any racist comments or articles that, I felt embarrassed about. I think within the context of the time. And then in 1955, there's a very significant small article on the front page of the Wellington Times. So this is halfway through his tenure, talking about a newspaper article that had been published in a major Sydney newspaper, talking about the deplorable living conditions out on the Aboriginal Reserve, Nanima Reserve. And from then on, you can really see there's a very noticeable change in the quantity and the seriousness of a whole series of articles that are taking on board affairs relating to Aboriginal people. So by 1957, there's 12 articles in 1 year dealing with education, housing, water, alcohol, a whole bunch of different issues that are key to the Indigenous community. And they're often placed really, on the front pages, on the front page of the Wellington Times. And so from then on, all the way up to when 1963, there's this, the second period is really, the Wellington Times, my grandfather, and the community in general really takes on board. There's a concerted effort to address the living conditions, education, and those issues in the Aboriginal community. And by the time Charlie Perkins does his famous Freedom Ride throughout New South Wales, visiting country towns, the first stop on the Freedom Ride is Wellington. So that's pretty significant. And Charlie Perkins comes with a whole group of students. Most of them are white students from Sydney University. They come to Wellington and they complete surveys and they talk to people and they go to one of the pubs that has a bit of a reputation for turning back Aboriginal people, not letting them drink in the premises. But on the whole, Charlie, they spend like half a day here, and Charlie says there are more important fights for us to fight. Essentially, Wellington has already addressed a lot of, some of those issues. And, I think that's, for Wellington, that's something that they can be really proud of, that before lots of other small towns and communities in Australia really started to look at their history and think about race relations, that it took place in Wellington.
And yet today, you would still say that there are problems in places like Wellington that are difficult problems to try and get a fix to.
Definitely. What as a nation, I think those issues of, closing the gap and issues of race relations in Australia relating to Aboriginal people are some of the most fraught and difficult for us as a nation to deal with. And in Wellington, it's not, there's been some great progress. There's some things that the community can be really proud of. The Aboriginal Health Service is one of the best in the state. But there are also lots of, problems with alcohol and drugs and welfare dependency in Wellington. And still underlining that, when you look at Wellington's history and its colonisation, the subtext to it all is taking the land and the wealth of the land, the resources. So in terms of, for either community, for the Indigenous community or for those communities that came and settled here, the main thing is this, the resource of the land. And today in Wellington, about 20% of the population is Aboriginal. Some of those people, there's the traditional communities, and then there's also Aboriginal people from other areas that have settled in Wellington. But they constitute 20% of the population. And still today, they own less than 1% of the land. So those legacies are very, very profound. We've made lots of steps towards reconciliation, but in this enormous key area of land ownership and wealth, and it's wealth in a broad sense, not just in terms economically, but also a sense of connection and ownership and an ability to, you know, obviously for Aboriginal people, that connection to land is spiritual and incredibly significant and central to their culture. So if you've got 20% of the population still owning less than 1% of the land, that's still, you know, a huge issue for Wellington to address.
You mentioned that one of the things that this project started off was as a small look at housing in particular, and it certainly did change along that way. The Lift Out Wellington, there's just been in the local Wellington paper as well. What sort of feedback do you expect to get as more and more people come across this publication?
Well, I'm really, you know, I hope when you do something like write a book or this, the Wellington publication, it's a book in the form of a newspaper, essentially. And it's a bit of a, you know, it's a bit of a one-way kind of conversation. Like, obviously, I've done enormous amounts of research, consulting, talking to the elders and Aboriginal people and got their advice and this. They've guided the project, very much so. But also, you know, when you publish something, then you know, I'm very, very keen for people in the community to for it to be more of a dialogue. So during this week, Reconciliation Week, the 27th to the 31st of May, there's going to be an exhibition at the Macquarie Theatre in Wellington with the publication and some related artworks that I have made. As well, the curator, Jodie Chester, a local Aboriginal person, she's invited five local young emerging visual art, Aboriginal visual artists to exhibit in the exhibition. And around that, we're leading up to it, we've had some excerpts from the Wellington publication published in the Wellington Times. And we've also invited the community to respond and to both address the issue of reconciliation. And also, you know, I'm very keen for people to write back and say, you know, for it to create a dialogue and a conversation about the Wellington publication. So that would be really great.